Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining another episode of An Unexpected Fight, a pediatric cancer podcast. I'm here today with a very special guest. Her name is Kelly, and I can't wait to tell you about how we met. So I'm missing my co-host, Amber, today, but we're going to still have a great episode. And so first, I would like to tell you a little bit about how I met Kelly. So Kelly and I are both cancer moms, and we got added to a cancer chat on Facebook, and neither one of our children had the cancer of this group we got added to. So I put on there, hey, I don't have a child with this type of cancer, but I do have this nonprofit if anyone needs any assistance. And Kelly chimes in after me and explains her role with where she's working. And so we hit it off and we're like, hey, we need to talk. And then from there, it's blossomed into a great friendship. And now we are colleagues at the National Pediatric Cancer Foundation. So I would like to introduce to you Ms. Kelly Goddard. She is the health navigator for the National Pediatric Cancer Foundation. And first, I'd like for her to tell us a little bit about her story.
All right. Hi, Tiffany. Thanks for having me. So my journey with pediatric cancer began in April of 2020. My youngest daughter, Riley, who was just shy of 10 months old at the time, had become sick over the course of a week. She had some vomiting. She was a little lethargic at times. She was originally misdiagnosed with a stomach virus. And my mom got told me something was off, but I couldn't quite pinpoint it. She was hitting all her milestones. Everything physically looked great. I brought her to our pediatrician twice, which is not typical. As a nurse, we tend to wait until things are really bad because we can kind of diagnose ourselves and see what's going on. But I brought her in twice because that's how off I felt like things were. She was a very happy baby prior to. And that week she was just very, very fussy. Nobody else in the house was catching this said stomach virus. But unfortunately, this was right when COVID started. And I was urged not to take her into the hospital if possible, because there's this new novel virus that we didn't really know much about. So even though my gut told me something was off, physically she was doing well. Her vital signs were stable. Everything looked great. So I took her home, and after a few more days, she actually did seemingly start to get better. And I thought, okay, maybe this was just me going into panic mode as a mom. But then unfortunately one evening she had crawled over and pulled herself up on our coffee table, and I watched her keel over, out of the blue. She totally lost her balance, eyes rolled back into her head, and I yelled at my husband to call an ambulance immediately. So when the paramedics arrived, they still kind of thought maybe, okay, it's just a little dehydration. And I quickly went into nurse mode and started explaining why she had zero symptoms of dehydration. Capillary refill was great. Her fontanelles weren't sinking in. They realized, okay, she knows a little bit more than we thought. And we rushed her to our closest pediatric emergency room, where they did a CT scan of her head and a bunch of other testing. And when those CT results came back, I will never forget, the ER doctor came into the room. Now, I had worked with this hospital, so I knew a few of these people. And she came into the room with tears in her eyes, and I thought, oh, that's not good. So she pulled me out into their little area with computers and showed me the image of a very large mass in my daughter's very small 10-month-old baby brain, and basically told me, I don't know what it is yet, but she has a mass, and you can see all this free fluid here, which I'm presuming is a bleed, and she needs emergency brain surgery right now. So unfortunately, where we were located did not have a pediatric neurosurgeon, so they threw us in an ambulance, and we drove 2.5 hours to the closest emergency room that had an hospital that had a pediatric neurosurgeon on call. We were very fortunate that night because he happens to be an extraordinary pediatric neurosurgeon. So he looked at the images, said, I unfortunately do not have time to do an MRI. I have to go in immediately. At this point, her vital signs were no longer stable. We were seeing that she was essentially dying. It was not good. So he went in emergently, and resected a portion of the tumor, evacuated the bleed, did the best he could with what he had to work with. And when he came out, I'll never forget, he brought a lock of her hair with him. And I hit the floor. I thought that was it. We lost her. But no, the nurses said, this is likely her first haircut. Please bring this to mom. So not the best way to go about it, but I can appreciate the sentiment there. So he told me that this is a brain tumor and that we would have to wait for biopsy results. So 3 days later, biopsy results came back. I got to see her in recovery. She was amazing. The first 24 hours were rough, of course. But after that, she was standing up in her crib in the PICU, pulling at the drains, pulling out all her IVs. And I thought, okay, this kid's ready to fight. 3 days later, it came back. Every parent's worst nightmare. Your child has cancer. Not only did she have cancer, she had stage 4 brain cancer, glioblastoma. And the first pediatric oncologist I met with told me that I had 1 to 2 years with her at best, that there is no cure for glioblastoma, that we can treat it, but, you know, not to expect long term. Of course, my heart was devastated and completely shattered at this point, but I went into fight mode and I started researching like a madwoman till 3 o'clock in the morning and reached out and got second and third and fourth opinions. And we finally found a neuro-oncologist who called me back and said, Kelly, I think I can cure this. He explained that glioblastoma in infants, there's about 10 kids a year diagnosed with it. It's extremely rare to see in a child under the age of one. But fortunately, we're learning now that it has better survival rates than it does for older adults and older children. So glioblastoma is the most common brain tumor in adults, in the adult world. But you don't see it too often with infants, and we're learning that it's different on a molecular level, which is good news because they're learning that it can indeed be treated. So that was, we're coming up on 4 years since diagnosis in April. She finished treatment 3.5 years ago almost now. She is 4 years old. She's still here with us. She's hitting milestones. She's incredible, and she is our hero, ultimately. But we, along this journey, I've learned that there was a lot of parents who were told very similar information, and I learned that there's a lot of gray areas in the pediatric cancer world, that we are decades behind in treatment options. And that is how and why I decided I wanted to get more involved. So after Riley's treatment was over and we had moved back home and things were seemingly, they'll never be normal, but seemingly going back to normal life for us, what our new normal was anyway, I met the CEO of the National Pediatric Cancer Foundation. We had done a local news article together, and I had thrown around some ideas and told him about what I was already doing with families, which was helping them kind of navigate their journey, helping them reach out and get second opinions, helping answer questions, sharing resources with them. And that is how the Health Navigator program was kind of created. So I founded the program almost 3 years ago now, and I've helped close to 90 families, I believe I'm at now, that I've worked with. Anything from helping them facilitate getting a second opinion to helping with transportation issues, connecting families with other fellow cancer families that maybe have a similar or the same diagnosis. Because as you know, Tiffany, having another cancer mom to talk with, and, you know, it's a community that you never want to be a part of, but when you're in there, you need each other. So just forming those connections, really anything in between. I've worked with families with all sorts of different things going on in their lives, and I absolutely love what I'm doing. Obviously, I'm very passionate about it, and my story makes me even more so. But yes, yeah, so I'm very happy to do what I'm doing, and that we got to meet, and I got to introduce you to NPCF.
Yes. So I know a lot of people probably don't know a lot about the National Pediatric Cancer Foundation, even though it is a national organization. So you've been with the organization quite a bit longer than me. So I think we should explain a little bit about NPCF and their goals and what they do for the pediatric cancer community.
Absolutely. So NPCF was founded, ironically, by two cancer moms in the 90s. They were both treated at the same hospital locally out of Florida. And they both quickly realized the same thing that you and I realized, that pediatric cancer is underfunded. There's a lot of gray areas. Treatments are decades behind. They still are, unfortunately, though it's gotten better since. And so they created this foundation, and it has grown tremendously. They started off, I believe, funding directly to, you know, one hospital for a bit, and then they decided, no, we need to do more. And now NPCF funds novel clinical trials throughout the country through our Sunshine Project. What sets us apart from other foundations who are funding trials is that our trials are going on. We may have one trial, for instance, that's going on in five different states. It's a collaborative approach so that we can gather more data, treat enough patients, because sometimes it can be hard with some of these more rare tumors to get the amount of patients you need on a trial. So they use more of a collaborative approach, and our doctors openly share research with each other to get good results. And the goal is not just to fund new drug trials. We know that those are happening all over the place, but our goal is to really kind of reach out and find more of these novel therapies that we haven't tried yet, less toxic and better treatment options. Because unfortunately, you know, I think it's 95% of cancer survivors end up with long-term health issues. And of course, we don't want that for our kids. So NPCF is trying to find not only more treatment options, but better treatment options with trials going on throughout the country. And every day we're growing and adding new centers, new sites to our project. Tiffany and I just got back from the Research Summit, which happens once a year. All of these, we had over 100 pediatric oncologists throughout the country come together and talk about what's working, what's not, their next big ideas, and to see them gather around these big round tables with as much passion as they have with what they're working on in their research is just incredible. And it truly gives me hope for the future of pediatric cancer. So NPCF, we fund these trials by doing a lot of fundraising, and we do that in many different forms. Some of our big ones, we have Fashion Funds the Cure, where little cancer warriors get to walk the runway with who they want to be when they grow up, which is just incredible in itself, to be honest. The kids have a blast. They absolutely love it, because not only are we raising money for research, but these kiddos get to meet their role models. And, you know, it really is just an incredible thing. There's never a dry eye in the house when we have that event. But we have that event going on at numerous locations throughout the country. And we've got a couple coming up at King of Prussia. We've got one coming up in Tampa, Florida. So all over the place, they get to rock the runway. We also have Brewing Funds the Cure, where multiple breweries throughout the country participate and donate a portion of, you know, one of their beers to pediatric cancer research. We've got Restaurants Funds the Cure, where, of course, restaurants can get involved. We have car shows that we do. We've got a walk that we actually have coming up in Tampa. So, and fishing tournaments. I mean, really, it doesn't end. We have all sorts of events. And if you check out our website, you'll be able to see some of those events for anybody that wants to get involved, because they're not just based out of Florida. Like I said, we have them all throughout the country.
And now we're having... So part of my role through the National Pediatric Cancer Foundation is a program called Join Us. So basically this program can be any existing foundation can join us. Maybe a family who wanted to start a foundation who hasn't done that yet, an organization, just anybody can be a part of what we're doing to help these kids. We can partner in so many different ways. And you can also do, one of the main things that we do is called a DIY. So basically, we help you do a fundraiser and you can give us the proceeds, give us half of the proceeds. But it's a good way to get involved and be a part of the Sunshine Project, because being in adult oncology, I see all of these clinical trials going on, and we're actually a part of the company I work for, of Sarah Cannon Research Group, which is this national research institution to basically enroll patients, adult patients, like the Sunshine Project. So you can get access to clinical trials pretty much anywhere across the nation. But before MPCF, we really didn't have this collaborative approach for children with cancer. And so being a part of this organization and the Sunshine Project, I told several, I'm going to get choked up about this. I told several of my colleagues when I got back from this research summit that that's probably one of the coolest things that I've ever been a part of as a professional, not only as a professional, as a mom to a child with cancer, because it really is showing that there are people out there who are wanting to advance medicine and pediatrics, and not just advance it, but really move forward and drive this into something that we don't have yet. And so it was incredible to be a part of, and it just further solidifies the reason why I wanted my nonprofit to transition into being a part of this bigger picture. And, you know, we raised a lot of money. I mean, $250,000 is no little bit of money. However, it doesn't fund a lot whenever we're talking about research and all the other things that you have to have to run a nonprofit. So being able to join MPCF and like still do what I want to do as far as I can do my fundraisers, but now I have this backing of a national organization to help me get this done, has been just really incredible. And I couldn't imagine being anywhere else. And like, Kelly, so, you know, we talked about the Sunshine Project and like all of these different things with MPCF, and you're the health navigator. So you help connect these patients with clinical trials. So do you just connect patients with MPCF clinical trials, or tell us a little bit about your role in the clinical trial space?
Absolutely. So no, I do not only work with MPCF clinical trials. I have worked with a couple of families who did happen to qualify for trials that the Sunshine Project is funding, and I was able to get a couple families into our trials, but I've also gotten a couple families into outside trials. So I not only work, you know, specifically with NPCF, I'm just here to help families navigate. I want to add, because I think a lot of people might not realize this, that I'm not charging families. Nobody's, you know, paying for these services. I'm just an extra resource. My position is funded. I'm working part-time, generously by a donor, of NPCF. And so I am a totally free resource for families. I start by researching, you know, if, for instance, they're like, hey, I want to look at multiple trial options. Everybody has access to clinicaltrials.gov. That's where you're going to find where all the trials throughout the country are listed. Unfortunately, it's not always easy for people to navigate, especially without having a medical background. Your child does not qualify for every, for instance, we'll just take like neuroblastoma. Your child who's diagnosed with neuroblastoma is not going to qualify for every neuroblastoma trial that's out there. There's a lot of factors in there. Age, of course. Have they been treated? Have they had surgery? Have they had radiation? And some of these things are going to disqualify you for certain trials. So I try my best to help kind of break that down for families and send them, based on the information they've given me, what trials they may qualify for. And then the next step would be to reach out to that site PI and see if indeed that family may or may not qualify for a certain trial. So yes, families can research this, you know, on their own, but it's a very difficult thing to navigate. And what I learned from my experience and my journey is, you know, I mentioned I was up till 3 o'clock in the morning doing research and trying to figure out, you know, what trials were out there and what type of treatment options existed for infantile glioblastoma. And the thing is, even though I'm a nurse, I shouldn't have had to be doing that in that moment. I should have just been at my daughter's bedside thinking about nothing but giving her snuggles and love and being there. But nobody that I knew of in my role really existed back in 2020. So I didn't really have anybody to fall back on that could do some of this groundwork for me. And that's why I created this role. I don't want families, even if they do have that knowledge base, I don't want them sitting there until 3 o'clock in the morning trying to navigate all the research and break it down. I want to take some of that off their hands and help to the best of my ability. And like I said, of course, it's not just trial based. I'm here to help with anything and everything in between. Just as a example, I had one mom who was during COVID times still somewhat, she was breaking down, you know, I really want to talk to a therapist, but I can't leave. Like my child is so immunocompromised and I can't leave them. And so I figured out what her insurance was and I called around and I found somebody that was willing to do like a Zoom therapy session with her. And I think she still talks to this person, but just little things like that. Yes, you know, could you do this on your own? Of course you can. But when you're trying to focus on your child's care, you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to be making those 20 extra phone calls. And, you know, so that's essentially what I'm here for, just to help as a free resource for families. I share a lot of financial resources. So social workers are absolutely incredible people, but they often have a caseload of 20 plus patients at a time. And so they do the best they can, but, you know, I'm here just to kind of help assist with that as well, because they can't, you know, they only have so much time in a day. So some of what I do might, yep, go ahead.
So you've also developed, a toolkit, which is so amazing. And I've looked at it and think that is such a great resource for families to have. So tell us a little bit about your toolkit and then we can talk about what else we're working on with that.
Yes, absolutely. So the Pediatric Cancer Toolkit is a guidebook. It's currently a spiral notebook that I cannot take full credit for. There were a lot of people that have worked on this toolkit in the past. What I think sets aside, because I have seen other toolkits with other organizations and guidebooks, but I think what kind of sets ours apart is that the people that voluntarily worked on this toolkit alongside me were healthcare professionals for the most part, pediatric oncology nurses, a pharmacy intern, a psychologist, a mental health nurse that I knew personally, who's incredible, and also a pediatric cancer mom who just, you know, was sharing stories. So I think that's kind of what sets it aside is not just anybody wrote this book. It was a team effort, and it was people who have had personal experience with pediatric cancer. It is an A to Z guidebook, I call it. It has everything in there from a medicine log, home tube feeding log, to side effects and how to manage side effects of the different cancer treatments. There's stories of hope in here. There's clinical trial information in here. So like I said, literally just a little bit of everything. I wish I had this book when my daughter was diagnosed. I didn't know about it back then. But this year we shipped it to 68 different hospitals throughout the country. So there's quite a few people who have had their hands. And once again, if you're listening to this and maybe you're, I don't know, a nurse educator that said, hey, I could use some of those, reach out to me because we ship them for free. Again, via generous donations from our donors. To 68 different hospitals at the moment and always looking to expand and share information with more.
And we can say 69 because I've delivered some personally too.
There we go. Now we're at 69. Let's just make it 70. We need one more.
Exactly. So somebody step up and please get the 70th hospital in so we can make this an even number.
And I'll send them out, you know, personally to families as well. So individual families who reach out to me, you know, one of the first things I always ask is, have you gotten one of our toolkits yet? You can access it online, but it is nice to have, because like I said, there is like feeding logs and things, and it's nice to kind of write down key information in. So yes, that is our toolkit.
Yes. So one thing about the toolkit, and I find this like super interesting just because I'm a weirdo like that. But so the company or the foundation that funds these toolkits for us is called the Tyler Robinson Foundation. And they are actually a foundation that was started by Imagine Dragons. So Imagine Dragons had, Kelly, you may have to correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they had a kid that attended one of their concerts who was battling, I think, osteosarcoma.
Yeah.
And he was at the concert. They ended up asking him to come play drums with them. And then the child passed away a little while later. And so the band decided that they wanted to make a nonprofit in this child's honor, which is
cool. His family started it, but they joined in. Yeah, but they joined the Tyler Robinson Foundation and his family. They're incredible people. But Imagine Dragons joined in to host like a benefit concert for them every year, which is just absolutely incredible. It's usually in Las Vegas, because that's where Imagine Dragons is from, and the Tyler Robinson Foundation. But yes, they are an incredible organization as well. And every year they host one of these amazing benefit concerts, and we're very, very happy to have them as partners.
So that's just another example of a way like you as a foundation can partner with something that's larger than yourself. You know, you don't have to always be, you know, someone like Imagine Dragons. You can be somebody like me who doesn't have a whole lot of money, but you want to. Kelly and I talk a lot about when we were in the hospital, we had a lot of bears and blankets, and that's so sweet and so kind. But if we took all this money that people were providing with these bears and blankets and took that and put it into, you take your small amount of money and now you put it into a bigger pot, and we can take these funds and really drive some meaningful research for these kids so that maybe they don't have to be treated in the hospital. Maybe they can be treated as outpatients and at home with less toxic medications that don't cause long-term side effects.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it might be what you think is a small amount, but you add it together and that's what really makes an impact.
Absolutely. So, Kelly, if someone wants to contact you or contact the Health Navigator through MPCF, how would they go about doing that?
Yep. So the easiest way to get in touch with me is to visit our website, which is nationalpcf, as in Pediatric Cancer Foundation, .org. And directly, you can either kind of scroll through and look at the different tabs. Under Get Involved, there's a tab for patient and families, and you'll see my Health Navigator tab there. The direct link is nationalpcf.org/health-navigator. Which we can probably put in comments and whatnot, I'm assuming, Tiffany.
Yes, we'll put all of this in the show notes.
Yes, and then there's a button that says click here to be contacted. And it's a very brief form that basically asks, you know, tell me a little bit about your child, your diagnosis, where you're at in treatment, and how can I help? And like I said, that really varies from family to family. From I need some additional financial resources because we're struggling, or I need help researching clinical trials, or I just want to connect with a cancer mom, or anything in between. Like I said, this is at no cost to the family. So I'm really trying to spread the word and get the word out there. A lot of social workers at various hospitals have my information as well that they'll sometimes share with families. But the easiest and quickest way is just to fill out one of those forms. I do my best to get back in touch with people within 24 or 48 hours. And then we'll go from there. You connect via email. That form generates an email to me. And then I typically leave it up to the family if they're more comfortable just emailing back and forth, if they want to set up a phone conversation. Some of these families I may connect with once or twice and then they're like, okay, I'm good. Others I've been chatting with for months and I'm I'm also good with that. I like to talk and I like to connect with people. So, yeah, so that is the easiest way to get in touch with me.
That's awesome. I really love that program that NPCF has offered for these families. And I love that it's also free. Well, Kelly, any last remarks, anything you would like to add before we close out our show today?
No, just for anybody listening, like I said, please reach out, whether, you know, you're a foundation that wants to get involved. Tiffany is a great person to reach out with. Tiffany and I are working a lot on projects together because our roles overlap a little bit. So, you know, ways, if you want to get involved with us, you know, please reach out to one of us. If you want to start a foundation or fundraise, reach out to us. If you need help navigating your child's cancer journey, please reach out to me and fill out that form. And, you know, I just want everybody to know that they're not alone in navigating this. There's a community and, you know, we're here to help and support the best we can.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today, Kelly. And one little side note, I do need to say that one huge thing about NPCF is that they have all the top ratings for all of the charity platforms, and they also use 89 cents of every single dollar that comes into this foundation for research. That is what's going to drive change in pediatric cancer.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Kelly, for being here today. Like I said, I will link all of this information in the show notes about how to get in touch with Kelly or how to get in touch with me. I thank you so much for listening to An Unexpected Fight, a pediatric cancer podcast. See you next time.
Thank you.